This week we have a special opening for you. Archival footage of a never-before-heard Winston Churchill speech, apparently given to dinner guests, at 10 Downing Street on the eve of VE Day.
I read somewhere once that Pablo Picasso would carry a revolver loaded with blanks, that he would fire at people who asked what his paintings meant. A more polite version of the same sentiment is articulated in the clip of David Lynch saying that Eraserhead was his most spiritual film, to which the interviewer replies, "Elaborate on that," and David Lynch says, "No." To remove art from its context by attempting to describe or explain it is a miserable Sisyphean endeavor, doomed to failure. Sometimes, though, you've got no other choice. Sometimes, the art you're talking about is a delicious meal crafted with love by dear friends over conversation about such genteel topics as the manufacture of Power Ranger action figures, rates of bathrooms to workers, or an Irish being told to look better by the maitre d', as you're drunk the finest of Paul Roger's champagne. Beyond any accusation of pretension, we must have the courage to liken such times to the highest successes of theatre, when the audience is participant to the degree of performer, for the technical work is the most ingenious construction of the props, which are the food, the wine, simultaneously the props and the script, and we, the guests, improvise upon the experience performed within us, mming and ahing, and giving voice to the great triumph of life, which is to enjoy these privileges of freedom, won by glorious battle against the forces of evil, boring food, dull conversation, and Nazis. Thus, though all we can do is fire blanks at you, enjoy our recounting of this night of highest art round a magnificent table. Pew, pew, bang, bang, I'm firing my little gun.
It is not clear how Prime Minister Churchill knew about David Lynch, who had barely just been born, and whether or not he'd ever in fact met Pablo Picasso, or what he thought a Power Rangers action figure was. But the authenticity of this recording is beyond doubt, its provenance being of the highest order. So we humbly ask you to take all of that into consideration while ruminating upon the historical significance and implication of what the Prime Minister had to say. And with that, let us move on to the main portion of our show. You there, buddy?
Is this the main portion?
No, yeah, no, we're, yeah.
Okay, I don't know if we're moving into a different bit or what. Okay,
yeah.
Nice, yeah, that's a little bit of a contrast between when you're like, I'm just going to wing the intro, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's fit, hit all the bases. Yeah, you know, checked all the boxes and recounted quite a few evenings all in one, so that was very good. It's very good.
Well, that was, I didn't practice my Winston Churchill impersonation well. I mean that that's a real recording. I've never done a Winston Churchill impersonation, and
no, of course not.
Yeah, no, and I wouldn't know how to do one even if I were to try. So if I did one, and it were bad,
it wouldn't even sound like that.
No, it wouldn't sound like that.
It like nothing even close.
Yeah, I
but,
yeah,
but yeah. So that's that. Folks,
and this will be relevant later, but if you do go listen to Winston Churchill recordings for whatever reason to try and figure out what his voice sounds like, he is audibly drunk in most of them.
Hell yeah.
This is the
nice
for all of the, like, you know, performances of people. I'm gonna try not to blow the levels on this, but doing the, like, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them in the air, we'll fight them on the land. He really delivered it more like, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them in the air, we'll fight them on the land.
Yeah. And that's pretty good. He's just constantly I don't know, there was some, like, fucking dumb YouTube video I saw a while ago. Some guy, like, I'm gonna try to drink as much as Winston Churchill fucking drinks on a daily basis, you know, whatever, he tries it for one day, and it's, like, the most ridiculous amount of alcohol. He's just like,
blasted.
The guy's, like, he's literally blackout drunk by, like, 1 p.m. Like, it's pretty funny. But,
Winston Churchill, also just a horrible guy. Like, just responsible for the death of so many millions of people. Like,
yeah, but you know, there's a lot that can be said about a lot of things.
Yeah,
often,
that's true.
And often is said about a lot of things.
And so, if we're in the business of saying things, it should be pointed out that Paul Roger's Winston Churchill Cuvée, really good.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking phenomenal.
Really goddamn good. Really embarrassingly good.
Yeah, but also really, I think, needs age more than any champagne I've ever had before.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, I'm glad we got to try it, but I also felt very, like, feel bad that we were drinking it.
Yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. it tasted like the most, like, Pinot-driven wine I've ever had, more than, like, a fucking, I don't even know if it's the majority Pinot, but it tasted like an extremely Pinot-driven wine. Let me look that up, actually. Yeah. Watch, it's like a Blanc de Blanc or something.
Well, you know what they say. You gotta fuck around to find out. And we fucked around, and this is what we found out.
Found out the 2013 was when we had?
Yeah, 2000.
The cuvée? Let me see. No, I don't want any fucking cookies. I don't want you to track me. I don't want any of this bullshit. Pinot Noir predominates, providing structure, breadth, and robustness. Chardonnay contributes elegance. So yeah, sounds like it's Pinot and Chard. To me, the Pinot, was like fucking wham. And the Chard did provide a little, like, I mean, it's hard to say with any of this shit, but like the bit of like the creaminess and like elegance and finesse to it. But it was, damn, no, that needs some age, and it'll be beautiful. How do you want to do it? Do you want to list what the menu was and then we can talk about it? Or what do you want to do? You want to sort of go start to finish, just sort of talk about it?
Yeah, I was wondering about that as well, because I feel like basically any format would work. But if you want to, why don't you run through the menu? And then we could list off, why don't we just give an overview of the menu and the wines and then talk about them sort of sequentially.
Yeah, totally. So basically the idea of the dinner was, so this is like the sequel really to the DRC dinner last year. It's just fucked up because
it's the, like, DR sequel dinner.
The DR sequel dinner, yes, thank you. There were like a few dinners, like basically four nights in a row that, or three nights in a row, I guess, that could have been... No, four nights in a row.
Yep, it was four nights.
That could have
all
been four nights in a row. That really could have been that. One of my friends had an idea of doing, let's do like Amarone and Zin, which I thought was a very good idea. Both things that we love very much and think are underappreciated and happen to have a lot of old versions of. So we did some caviar, some Ossetra caviar from, believe it or not, Costco. Costco's got amazing Ossetra caviar for a very, very, very reasonable price. So we did that. And did that with, we were originally going to do just Cristal, but then Steve's favorite champion in the world is Paul Roger Cuvée Sir Winston Churchill. And for years I've been like, oh, should I get a bottle? I'm like, fuck, that's expensive. And I'm like, oh, could I give him a bottle? I'm like, damn, that's so much more expensive this year. So I split a bottle wholesale with my buddy, and we split that in the Cristal. We were like, let's just fucking do it, man. Fucking get her done. So we started with those and then segued into the first course, which was bone marrow, roasted bone marrow, and escargot.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was served with, ideally, so it was supposed to be with the champagnes. However, we finished almost both bottles of champagne before we sat down. We were like, well, what are we going to do now?
That's not quite true.
What? I said almost both bottles.
Well, there was a crucial amount of champagne left for...
Yes. We nearly finished both of the bottles.
Just horrified at the thought that you forgot about that.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. Okay. I was leaving that open for all you right. to swoop in. yeah, much like
Dunkirk
saving
moment.
The day, much like a certain, you know, a masked, a cloaked superhero saves the day, you know.
Very good, Mr. Bone Marrow.
Yeah.
Look at him, escargot.
Yeah. And wow. Wow, that would be like a line that was totally out of the like fucking 60s version of that show.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Which would have been amazing if Alfred had been played by Jeremy Irons in that. But he was, you know, like yeah. 10.
So yeah, yeah.
Dressed as an old man, but he's got the same voice.
Yeah, and still talking. Yeah, he's still saying those very sexually suggestive things. Anyway, so we had bone marrow and snails. You're supposed to do the champagne with that, and we still did, but, you know. And then, so I'll get into that after. Then we did seared foie on a bed of cauliflower puree with a little, so it's not truffle oil, but it's shaved truffles preserved in olive oil. So you do get, like, actual truffle flavor in there. it is, because it's like with the caviar and the truffle thing, like the legit version of both of those things are like very far out of our budget. Like, in order to get the amount of truffles, like fresh truffles that we would needed to do what we did, would have been like, you know, fucking
as much as either bottle of champagne.
As much as yes, easily. So like wholesale. I mean, so retail, not wholesale. So foie with the coiffure puree and. And truffles. Then it wasn't the lamb after that, was it? No.
No, there was an interstitial.
No, there was
course.
The salad.
Yeah.
There was the salad, right? I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like a seared endive salad with some chicory. Had that. Little hot and cold salad sort of thing. And then we did lamb chops. I forget what it was served over. Was it like the roasted radicchio and shit, I think. Again, can't really remember. All I can really think about is the wines.
Yeah.
No, the lamb was very good.
There wasn't there was something. It was roasted. Oh, shoot. Well, yeah, I think it was radicchio.
I think it was, yeah, I think it was. And then there, for dessert, I made a pavlova, and we did some sauternes with that. But the wines that we did with all the other things were, we did Rosso del Beppi from Quintarelli. We did an old Tomasi, like a 70, no, sorry, an 83 Tomasi. We did a 60s Bertani, Recioto della Valpolicella, which we'll talk about later. And then Zins, we did a very old Turley, like it was an 01, I think, Hain Vineyard.
Was it? I thought it was a 99.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah, so 99 Turley. And then, yes, you're right. Sorry, I'm looking at a picture of it now. 99 Turley. And then we did the 76 Gergich.
Yeah, and the Rosso del Beppi was, that was a 10, right?
I think it was a 2010, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Am I missing any wines?
Then after dinner, we had the Sauterne.
Yes.
With
yes.
the
but I'm thinking with it the was Pavlova. The were there only two Zins on the table?
I think
the
so.
The Turley and the Gergich?
It wasn't as many Zins, because it was the three Amaronis and the two Zins.
Yeah.
And the one, you know, too old to technically be Amaroni, I guess.
Yeah.
And then but I think it was just the two Zins, which might have had something to do with the Turley being what, 15.8% alcohol?
Yeah, it was a big boy.
Yeah, because there was between the because we didn't really get into drinking those wines until sort of we drank them with the first course, but we ended the first course with that I think was all the Zin that night.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we ended up doing. So yeah, do you want to go through the dinner as you? As you experienced it?
Well, I mean, we should just start talking about how all that stuff worked together. So the first, like, real pairing, like, the, particularly the Bertani went really beautifully with the bone marrow and the escargot, palate-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
The Tomasi was just stunning on its own, but the Bertani really, Bertani? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Bertani, yeah.
Just paired beautifully. The Turley kind of didn't meet its match. I guess the foie contended with it, but it really went really, really well with the lamb.
Yeah.
But the end of the first course, going back to that, we when each of us had eaten our bone marrow and escargot with the remaining with the remaining champagne, and we each kind of had to pick our champagne of choice. I did the Paul Roger. We luged a sip of champagne out of the hollow in the bone, which might be the pairing of the night. That was just such an insane flavor.
It was, the bones were split the long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just, man, that's just such an obscene thing to do. Yeah, just a heinously decadent moment. But goddamn, does that taste good. And, you know, I'll bet you it tastes good even if it wasn't, you know, Cristal. Or in the case of, honestly, it part of the reason I did the Paul Roger is because it was the right amount of like fatty complement to how just opulent but also insanely acidic that wine is. So it it was really very beautiful that way.
Absolutely,
an absolutely mind-crushing wine anyways, but
the Paul Roger,
that was so beautiful. Yeah, but I mean, both of those champagnes are, the Cristal is frustrating because we talked about this already. It's a frustrating wine because, as you kept saying, I it'd be fascinating to try at 20 years old, maybe.
Yeah,
And at a scant 9 years old, it just doesn't feel quite, you know, locked in, I guess.
No, it's not ready to go.
I have said things on this show that make me hate myself.
No, dude, but it's like I don't know, like somebody was saying, like, no, it's just because we were talking about that, and they were like, it's just crazy how you like buy a wine and be like, I'm not going to drink it for 30 years or whatever. And I was like, well, it's because it's not ready. And it's like, you wouldn't like put a chicken in the oven to roast it, and then like you put the thermometer in and it's like 90 degrees and you're like, oh, ready to eat. Like, no, it's going to, you know, like, it's not ready.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that was really interesting about, because the previous, the DRC Mark I dinner, the youngest wine by a long, long way was opening a Langa Nebbiolo at the end of the night from the cellar. And besides that, I think the youngest wine was from 2007. Was the 2010 Ikem. That was the youngest wine.
Yeah.
And that kind of like the Rosa de Beppe this time, pulls a fast one on you where it's like, you can drink this young because it's just so fucking good that you know, like we were talking about this with the top 100 tasting. There is wine out there that's just so goddamn good that you drink it when it's quote unquote too young. And it's like, oh no, this is ready. I just need to like pair it with something pretty, you know, contentious. Like I need a meal that I am like, I need a wine that can fucking stand up to this. And then you have a wine like that and you're like, good God, thank goodness this is fucking perfectly cooked foie gras. Because otherwise, I'd just be...
Because, if it was, you know... No, it was definitely overcooked. That shit should have come out of the pan, you know?
You're such a dick.
That was so funny.
That was... God, that was just a beautiful moment.
For the listeners, my friend, a very dear friend of mine, him and I both love cooking very much, and... he's very, I would say I'm opinionated as well, but he's very opinionated about, you know, how things should be done, you know? And like 3 days before or whatever, I had cooked up like a practice piece of foie, and I did it, and I was like, oh, actually the pan was a little too hot because, you know, I had to, you know, baste a little more to get it. But basically, like I had practiced, so I knew how long it was going to take. So I was cooking it, and he was like, two or three times he like would walk past me and be like, that needs to come out of the pan now.
Yep.
And I've like...
You're being generous there. Eventually, he was just standing at your shoulder saying, you need to take that out.
like off, out of the pan, off. Yeah. And like, I've cooked with him enough to know that like, you just kind of, you're like, okay. So what you do is then you take out the one that's done. You do it like slow. You don't turn the heat down. You just, maybe if you look like you turn it down, but then he walks away and then you turn it back up again. And you take him out slow. And then, you know what I mean? You find workarounds to it. But, No, the foie was good.
It was excellent.
The foie was very good.
So we're going well.
Let's go back.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
the caviar.
So right. Well, the caviar was how I didn't. Even, God, just such a bastard. The caviar was so goddamn good. But and like that it was
butter.
An interesting instance of the and the butter was really helpful with the Roger mm-hmm. of kind of accomplishing that same like it was the perfect thing to kind of intercede in terms of the acid mm-hmm. and temper the richness a little bit like because it was so rich then all of a sudden the richness of the wine was interacting with that and then the acid mm-hmm. of the wine was kind of cutting through both of those but with the
oh my god
what
no just thinking about it like yeah. the opulence of it oh, of the whole god. Meal is just yeah. like exhausting to think about even
when the should we get into the serving dish for the caviar and
no, we can leave that out. We can leave those details out.
Okay.
But yeah. but so that's just, you know,
both
that's for the home team.
Yeah. Both the wines went brilliantly with the caviar, but
yeah.
they both weren't able to mask how I like neither of them showed as well that night as I am of the opinion that the Krug and the 07
oh, yeah, yeah.
did at the
yeah, yeah.
previous
mm-hmm.
year's version of this event.
just, yeah.
Again, yeah, yeah. statements that, you know, when the class war finally happens and the rich are getting eaten, someone's going to dig this up and my head's going to be under the guillotine. But...
But then they'll find out that you never worked for a pharmaceutical company. You never worked for a bank. You know, like you, none of those things. And they're like,
Yeah.
Huh. All right. We'll just send in. We're not going to kill them. We'll just send in some to like hard labor.
Literally the scene. Like, okay. The scene from the menu where it's like, what school did you go to? Student loans. And I'll be able to be like, yeah. It's like, oh.
yeah. All right. Fine. Yeah.
They're both, like, it's so hard to, they're both spectacular, and I do think, given the right amount of age, because, what, that comp had an extra 6 years, I think with 6 more years, the Winston Churchill
yeah.
would probably be, I hope I get
be
the chance
like showing comparably.
To try that wine with that kind of age on it, because, yeah, just an incredible wine, but one that was just like fucking revving its engine like a 16-year-old lunatic.
Yeah.
Again,
also decanting champagne helps.
Yeah, that did help, and I don't know. I would say if you're looking to pair caviar with champagne and you want an amazing experience, just because that is always going to be an amazing experience. And you're buying your caviar from Costco, go ahead and fucking buy the Costco champagne, because that shit's great too. Like, don't, $25,
yeah, yeah.
$30, whatever it is, it's 100% worth it and fantastic. Like, you kind of have to jump another $30 to get something comparable from, like, a grower champagne.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was funny was that I think a lot of people preferred the Cristal with the caviar. Like, mm-hmm. they preferred the Paul Roger in terms of, like, the quality of the wine, but preferred Cristal with the caviar.
It did pair
And
better,
also knowing,
yeah.
like, which is just funny because that's, like, that wine is just designed for, like, Russian...
Literally.
Like,
what,
oligarchs.
Yeah.
yeah like, royalty. Yeah. And So, oh, it just makes sense that that would just go well with that. So that was all very funny kind of for us to realize. But, yeah, And then somebody was saying also how, like, I don't know if he's had... Cristal with age, I don't think he has, but I think he was saying how like it gets this really delicious like marzipan type of thing as it ages, which I think would be pretty fantastic. And you can with both of them, obviously.
Yeah.
You can tell that like, damn, this with a bunch of age would be fucking like amazing. So
yeah, it would.
It's yeah.
I think it would develop into a kind of like more complex, more. Deeply explored version of what the Krug cuvee, the you know Krug, mm-hmm. What just their Blanc de Blanc,
Blanc de Blanc. Yeah, yeah. What that kind of, in terms of that biscuity sort of rich quality that has in a very beautifully, fully realized way when it's, you know, however young the one that we had a year ago was, like, I could see Cristal aging into the, like, you know, the next level of Pokemon version of that, you know, where it's like, if Krug is, you know, if Krug is Venusaur, the Cristal would be Ivysaur.
Wow. Yeah.
Hey, look, I'm trying to really pull the reins on the highbrow shit right now. We gotta have some working class metaphors.
Folks, just Pokemon Go down to the wine store and buy a bottle of Cristal. Pokemon Go down to Costco and get some.
I'm just chilling down at my local wine shop.
But yeah, so no, those champagnes were wild.
But also,
I think the next that. Oh, sorry, I was going to move on to that, to other wines, but you want to go on the.
Well, I was going to say that, like, it is also interesting that, like, Cristal, like, Rotor Cristal is an insanely branded, like, it's one of the most, like.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, like, insanely inaccessible things that also has humongous brand, you know, recognition. Like, you can buy, you know, you can buy many of the things that get referenced and they're sort of expensive in, like, it is synonymous with, like, a sense of prestige and wealth. And then also just, it still has to be this, you know, like, I think there could be a question around, like, what's the push and pull of, like, what is this wine? Who's drinking this wine? Where is this wine's, like, cultural cachet? What things is the, like, proprietor of Rotorer saying that pisses off the clientele that that wine has developed? Yeah. And none of that really exists with the Winston. Like, I'd never even heard of the Winston Churchill cuvee before it was there that evening. Like, I didn't know it existed. You know, and it's like, in terms of branding and what it is as an object, is, I think, somewhat more like, this is what it is, and this is what we want it to be, so this is what it's always going to be, kind of thing. Whereas, like, there's more of a scrutiny on Rotorer. And I don't know what that, you know, whether or not that actually has ever impacted the winemaking, or if the wine's different than it would have been if it didn't get a whole bunch of notoriety, you know, who knows. But there's, I think, more of like a, you know, one of those two wines is harder to find, is what I'm getting at. One of those two is, like, you know, one is like Dom Perignon is like any liquor store in the country is going to have a bottle of Dom kicking around just in case someone walks in and wants to spend $250 on a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
And that's also, you know, Cristal occupies a similar sort of cultural valence. Whereas walking into, I don't know where in Oregon I would go to try and buy a bottle of the Winston Churchill.
Churchill? Oh, yeah. Probably. See, it's, I don't know. Like, you don't really see it around that often. No. I don't know what the production is like number-wise on that. But
those boxes are super nice. I mean, God.
The boxes are hilarious. But, so then.
Sorry, I just, a killer move, like, if you can ever, I should have thought of this. An insane move is, like, giving someone a gift that's in, like, a bag, and instead of using tissue paper, wrapping whatever it is, especially if it's a wine bottle, in the very specific orange cellophane that they use for bottles of Cristal, but it can, you know, but it not being a bottle of Cristal, like, that's a good punked style joke that you could pull on someone.
It is good. Yeah. I think there's some other sparkling wine that has, I know that I've seen, like, there's this one Italian sparkling wine and a Spanish sparkling wine that both come in that, like, similar cellophane. I don't know if it's the same exact one. It's probably not. Cristal's probably, like, patented that or something, but
it's like Tiffany
blue. A similar sort of one. I look and I'm like, is that Cristal? And I'm like, oh no, it's not Cristal.
Yeah,
which is, I always feel kind of lied to, you know. But I think it probably is the clear glass thing.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So I guess the next course we did was the Turley. It was the Turley and the Bertani, I think we did with the with the bone marrow and snails, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Bertani was super cool. It was like, I mean, both of them were. The Turley was like more, it was kind of more what you would kind of expect it to be, where it's like fully saturated, like fruit, lots of savory stuff, you know, fun stuff, but still like fruit predominantly.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's delicious old zin, you know. The tannins had really like mellowed out nicely, but still very, like, very full bodied.
Yeah, it was like having an entire jar's worth of jam shot directly into your face from a bazooka.
Yeah, yeah. And but still like so fresh. I mean, yeah. Obviously what makes like good zin good is the freshness on the acidity and the overall balance of a wine. It did come, obviously it was a humongous wine, you know.
No, but it didn't come off as like hot alcoholically. It
came not at all.
It genuinely is a great example of like, I think the texture of the wine would have been, it could have been easy to like, for it to have gotten over jammy.
Definitely.
In trying to balance that, but it was a very, it was for how hefty it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it was sort of like how there's something kind of delicate to the way that a bull moves when it's like really like moving at speed, you know, it's like this insanely huge mass of muscle, but like that muscle can, you know, turn on a very quick, quick impulse. And this wine definitely had that quality to it.
Totally. Yeah, no, really pretty fascinating deal. And then the Bertani was like, one of the reasons I found that wine especially fascinating is that it's able to, and really old Amarone is like the Tomasi's and stuff, like the 70s Tomasi stuff. it's able to do this crazy thing where like, you sort of smell it and you kind of interact with it and it feels like it's like a 12% alcohol wine. Just aromatics wise and stuff.
Oh,
and you're
like,
oh, weird. Okay, whatever. And then you go to taste it and it doesn't come across hot, but the like presence of the wine is like room encompassing. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't hit you, but it like surrounds you almost. And this doesn't make any sense, right? Because we're talking about like liquid that you're drinking.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, to other people who haven't had, like so there's some people who haven't had wine that is like even, you know, like 5 years old or like it's 6 years old or something. And we're talking about wine that's fucking like 60 years old.
You know the THX sound, like the beginning of the original Star Wars movies?
Oh, yeah, that
It had that quality to it where it just starts out in a way where it's very smooth, but it just the progression of what you're talking about, but it like it goes from this very supple thing that just you don't even really sense where it comes from, and then all of a sudden it's like shaking the walls because it's just demonstrating how like it's a demonstration of like its full breadth of potential, where it's like you're gonna hear it when it's like very soft and it's gonna be there and it's gonna have clarity, but it's also gonna have that clarity when it wants to just make your bones rattle.
Right. It's a very good description of it. And that wine is like, how much longer could that age? Literally, like, I have no idea.
So
100 years?
The Turley, maybe it felt like we were drinking it at the right time. I could see it aging better. Or continuing to age into something not better, but different.
More mellow.
Yeah. With the previous year, we had the Riesling and both the DRCs were like, we drank them at the right time and they were old wines when we drank them. Not fallen apart yet, but like old.
If you have to like mature wine to appreciate those.
Everything we drank this time, you could make the argument it was too young. I think that across the board, I would feel comfortable.
Yeah,
with
no,
that
it's
statement.
It's insane, including the, you know, including the 60s Amarone and the 1976 Gergich.
Yeah, which I think might be the most like, I don't know that it was my, I really liked the Turley. I liked the Rosso Beppi. Was great and very fun and like, you know, just kind of fun to have something that was like within this century. I think in terms of like surprises, the Gergich might have been the champion of the night in terms of just how fucking like just brawny. It had the musculature of somebody who's worked in like on a farm their entire life and is like 60, but you think they're like 48 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, what the hell?
Totally,
like,
yeah.
Somebody who could, like, no. pick up the back end of a pickup if they needed to, like, get it off of somebody's leg.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's... So the thing with the Bertani that I thought was very interesting was that it had this... So where the Turley was fully enveloped in its own, like, fruit character, the Bertani was in its savoriness. Like, it had this, like, fresh bay leaf, very, like, kind of floral, but also, like... To say, like... People say, like, oh, it's like roasted berries, or it's like, you know, poached fruit, or like not poached, but like sort of other like masked things indicating some degree of like the fruit being cooked or tired or that it's been like processed in some way.
Mm.
This had like the when you roast tomatoes, not like make a sauce out of them, but you put them in the oven and you roast them like that.
Mm-hmm.
That like depth of the tomato flavor. That equivalent, but for like fresh fruit. So it's sort of like when we were talking about the DRC, like it smelled like if there was a very vibrant flower that smelled like a mushroom. How like that doesn't really make any sense, but
that
it's sort of that way of combining like a roasted or like how it was like a stock, a similar sort of like stock esque bouillon sort of thing, but in a different kind of expression that doesn't indicate any sort of tiredness, I guess.
Yeah, it's sort of like how if you can, the way you can like barbecue, grill peaches to turn them into a dessert. If you could do that with like, if you could do that with raspberries and blackberries, like if you could do that with like a marionberry, that's kind of the quality that wine had of like, you know, without the berries just falling through the grate of the grill and just burning down in the, you know. If that were possible.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. And it seemed very lean. I mean, especially next to the fucking Turley.
Yeah.
It seemed very lean. And I think I should have done more research on this before we recorded this. But yeah, it's labeled as a Recioto. Recioto della Valpolicella, which is, you'll see it now. And if you see that on labels, like a 2018 or whatever, you're like, oh, that means it's like a sweet. Like, there's Amarone, which is drier, and there's Recioto, which is sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
Amarone, as we know it, is, a pretty new thing, relatively speaking. And everything was just Recioto before. So I think there was discrepancies because certain producers were making drier versions of it, and certain producers were making sweeter versions of it. So I think, I assume that's probably why it happened, why they sort of split off and made that designation. But, Bertani, like, this specific wine was definitely, like, had they used today's labeling, it would have been... an Amarone.
This one was Amarone before Amarone was Amarone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
fucking, it was very cool. Yeah. So then, next we did the, did we just have all the wines on the table at that point?
By that point, we just had pretty much Gergich. Everything on the table, yeah.
Yeah, we had the Gergich, we had the Tomasi, and then we had the Rosso del Beppi, I think. Yeah. So we only had two Zins. Interesting. And I think that's it. Yeah, we didn't have other... I'm trying to think, but I can't think of any other Zins.
No, we didn't have any other Zin that night.
But the Gergich was pretty wild. Flavor wise, I mean, just like delicious, but like I think it could have used more air, even though it had been open for
a while.
6 hours.
Yeah. It could have taken more air. Really it good. Still had a bit of a like almost like a dry, grassy quality to it. Like and in terms of like its structure, like it had this like pretty like firm quality, not stiff, but like it, you know, or maybe ripe grass is better, not dry, but like ripe. Because there was like a like, and it, you know, greenness doesn't sound right because it's, you know, it was more
it wasn't integrated
than that, but it was
but
it had this like kind of like just because it was so old and there was so much like. Aged character to other things that were going on, there was this other current that felt almost green because it was still so vibrant and fresh and like I don't know and like earnest, maybe a weird
no it was it felt like honest, just good old fashioned good made wine.
Yep. Just good old, good made wine.
Good old wine, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was almost like if, you know, this also doesn't make sense because it wasn't the flavor profile at all, but the way that, like, a pear, when it's just underripe, will have, like, a slight starchiness to it, It was almost like that, where it was like, yeah, there's like still stuff here that could like mellow out and calm down in this, what, 47-year-old wine?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. No, it was fucked up.
It was so like good, that. Yeah. Because it also had like, it, you know, it had the full saddle leather. It had the full, you know, it had the full, oh, yeah, tobacco smoke. It like had all that like,
yeah,
real,
yeah, no, you had
beautiful
the,
tertiary
you had
stuff
the relish, you had the onions, you had the chili on top, you had everything.
But then it also just had that pop of like, and it was different from the, you know, it was different from also, you know, like just ripe blackberry kind
of
character.
Pop.
It had some booyah. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
It was good.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Dang. Dang.
Yeah, man. What else? Yeah, the Rosto Beppi, it was fucked up because it's like, that's an awesome wine.
God damn it.
But good. I think any time, it's like, it's fucked up. It's like, if you have like five wines that are very good and then you have like an amazing sixth wine, like all of a sudden all those other ones sort of, you know, are there in context to the sixth one, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it is with the old wine too, where you're like, these are all ready to drink. You're like, this other one's good, but it's just not ready. And like, it doesn't like, you can still be like, damn, this wine's really fucking good, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're like, God, ah, man.
Like, yeah.
Damn it. So it's,
yeah,
it just makes you want mature wine more than you already like do, you know?
Yeah, it did have like, there is a quality of like just something that's just getting into its secondary flavor profile that mm-hmm. is kind of nice to like just break that up,
yeah,
and just have something that's a little more like the acid's a little brighter and fresher, and like it's just a little like,
yeah, yeah,
it's just got a little bit instead of like the beauty of, you know, tarnish on silver, it's still shining. Like, it's still bright,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
clear, clean. Like, all the lines are still just very primary.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, you know, it's literally like looking, well, not literally, but it's like looking at, you know, the difference between old growth wood grain and mm-hmm. and new growth wood grain, and like the difference between like the density of a 2x4 from an old growth
mm-hmm.
tree and the density of a 2x4 from a second growth, you know, or like, you know, second, you know, like a planted farm tree is like the, you know, the rings are, instead of being a centimeter apart, they're like a millimeter apart, and there's just this like,
yeah, yeah,
you know, there's so much more information, kind of like it feels like there's just so much more information just coded into old wine that it's kind of nice to have a wine that's like, yeah, I've only got 13 years of, you know, stuff in me right now, as opposed to,
yeah, yeah.
Because for how fresh and, like, just lively they were, all those older wines were just like, yep, every sip of this you take is going to be, like, just, you know, you're just going to have, like, this weird little moment, like, this little, like, acid flashback of, like, all the shit that's happened between when this was made and where you are now. No. Right, yeah. No, the world's kind of fucked up, isn't it? Just, like, sitting there having a
totally.
Minor existential crisis with every sip of wine.
No, it's, like, it's kind of, like, when you have those sort of wines, it's, like, you know, whatever, a group of people, like, all sitting around sort of hanging out wearing, like, more casual clothes, and there's someone who comes in who's, like, overdressed.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, you're dressed very nicely, and, like, there's nothing wrong with the way you're dressing, but it's just, like, it stands out in this way that, like again, it's not like there was, like, a dress code where it has to be informal. It's just like, oh, are you going somewhere after this? Like, did you just come from somewhere? Like, what is the, it's a little bit confusing, but, like, so it is nice to have that freshness, but at least I find it's hard to go. It's easy to go from young wine to old wine, but it's hard to go from old wine back to young wine.
Yeah, there are. Well, it's also like it's hard. It can be hard to go from like tannic red wine back to white wine, or, you know, like I actually like doing that, but it takes some like getting used to. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But oh yeah, no, it was. I was really glad it was there because it was also nice to have. I feel like we had a better spread. I feel we had every decade covered, right? Because we had the tens with the champagne, then we had the
aughts.
Rosa de Beppi. I guess we didn't have anything. Oh, was the Sauterne from the aughts?
No, I think that was 2011. Oh, 2013.
Right. So yeah, nothing but, from you know, the aughts, I guess. But
yeah.
But then we have the
90s, 80s, 70s, and 60s. Yeah. That's true. The Tomasi is very interesting.
Yeah,
because we had
get to that yet.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of those with Steve now. I think we've had like two from the 70s, one from the 80s, and one from the 90s. And like, what was it, an 83 that we had?
Yeah.
Like that, and the, like, yeah, that's like just entering the drinking window, which is like,
yeah, I was going to say.
It's pretty fucked up.
It came off a lot sort of like almost broody compared to the other Amarone, like compared to the Bardani. Yeah. It like, it was much like, there was savoriness, but there was also like a lot more of the like cacao, tobacco, you know, like drive, and then the fruit profile was more like plummy and definitely on the like blackberry as opposed to black raspberry or even raspberry kind of window that the Bertani seemed to kind of be hovering in.
Yeah. No, totally. And I think so. There was a different Tomasi that I thought about bringing, but I wanted to do the 83 because I think it was it's a good for that reason to contrast, because you just have a couple of, if you have like, you know, a bunch of like, if you have a lot of old Amarones lined up and you're like, wow, this thing turns into something very like, this is very beautiful, but you're like, oh, maybe that was just the way that the wine was made then, and maybe it's different now because I taste like current vintage Amarone. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This doesn't make any sense. So like, does it really turn into that? So I think it's, I liked doing, having sort of like an intermediate one where you could see like, okay, it's still slightly resembling itself when it's younger and it's on its way to getting to this other, like, here's what it's like when it's totally relaxed and here's, you know, just like a stepping stone sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because it's got to, you got to see it to believe it sort of thing. Because it'd be just because it's such a stark contrast between like young and old Amarone.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, I think that's it, right?
Except for the Sauternes at the end.
Oh, the Sauternes. Yeah, so that was the, I didn't want to, he asked me like, oh, which one should I do? Like, this is before dinner started. And I was like, oh, we should do the other one. And then ended up for some reason going with the other one.
Take the foie out of the pan kind of moment.
Yeah. And because the other one was, it was going to be a Dwazi Dane, 2013, I think.
Son
and
we of had bitch. The,
and it was the Cantagrill 2011, yeah. I think, which God. Is like Dwazi Dane's like second wine. So that was one that like I bought a case of it and I have it with Steve because I got it for like $10 or $11 wholesale per bottle. So I'm like, this is our like.
You bastard.
This is our Wednesday night Sauterne.
Yeah.
You know?
A phrase said by a grand total of three people in history. Yeah, this here's our Wednesday night Sauterne.
Yeah, me, like Napoleon, and I guess the guy who owns Ecamm.
Which so was probably, Napoleon.
Which was Napoleon, so there you go. Oh, man. But, no, so, but yeah, the Dwazi Dane, 13, I think. Yeah, it's just fresher, like, in terms of, well, no, so they're both fresh, but the Cantagrill just has more, like, it tastes a little bit more mature, like, it has more of those, like, I think the Botrytis influence is heavier, and it is more towards, like, the, like, burnt sugar phase of its life. It's not all the way there yet, but it's sort of on its way over to that, like, really tasty creme brulee land.
Mm-hmm.
And the dessert was like egg whites and whipped cream and like fresh fruit. Like, no, I want something. I want like a young Sauternes that's just like kind of like ripping acid. And it's going to be like, you know, some Botrytis in there, definitely. But yeah, I want it to be super clean and crisp. And I mean, it was fine. By at that point in the evening, everybody was like, you know, like delirious, you know? So.
Oh, yeah.
It almost didn't even really matter, you know?
Yeah.
But everyone, it was a good,
it was like everyone was a good managed time. To make it through most of their lamb. And the lamb was really where the, I think the Turley shone and the Rosa del Beppe were both. It was a good, you know, they were good wines for that dish. The other wines went with it beautifully, but those ones were the ones that were really like, okay, this is our moment. But the.
Totally.
The, like. Everyone managed to like get through that before the foie really like hit gut wise, and then everyone was just like, "Oh fuck!"
I was like, "I'm good." Yeah, I was like, "I don't think I've ever been that full without throwing up in my life."
Yeah,
that was like, I was really like tippy toeing on the edge there.
Same.
I had to like go to bed like sitting up.
Yeah.
Like I, I was a very happy boy though. But oh yeah, the always successful salad, basically. Side salad with those wines. It's just like doesn't make any sense, but it works.
Oh, it was
anchovy,
so
garlicky,
good, yeah.
Lemony, yeah. Fucking thing.
Went beautifully with the Amarone, both the Amarones and the Gergich, honestly. Went super well with the Gergich.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the type of thing where it's like we like first time we had that experience was with a 71 Tomasi.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like laughing so hard, being like, oh yeah, I'm going to like, you know, 11 Madison Park or go to like La Bernardin. And you're like, what would you like? You're like, could I have the green salad, please, with extra anchovies and lemon and garlic? And they're like, okay, and what to drink? You're like, oh, the oldest bottle of Amarone that you have. And then being like, what the fuck are you doing, you know?
I'm having but, like, a good time, motherfucker.
It's like just the best pairing. Yeah. Like, just nobody believes you until they have it. And they're like, oh, wow, this is,
yeah,
this is fucked up. This, yeah, and you're like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
gigantic red wine.
Well, that was
very old.
That was one of the supplemental. Was that originally meant to be opened the Mario and Luisa? It's Mario and Luisa, right?
The Martinelli Giuseppe and Luisa. That was sort of an impromptu thing last year, but it was.
But it went with that course essentially. It was
totally. Like, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was like, if we're gonna do this, we might as well do this. I got the wine here. I think he had already had it stood up because we were debating it.
Yeah,
and so. But yeah, so like that was fun to see like sort of an approximation of it, but having it with like old Amarone is the real fucking deal.
It's the real shit right there, folks.
It was a stupid night.
Like, goddamn. It was one of those where fuck me.
From a cooking perspective, everything came out like how I wanted it to, which like for somebody as picky as me, you know, and him as well, was like, damn, that was great. We pulled that off. That was a lot of fun.
You guys fucking nailed it. No. It was like the food was like it. I'm kind of grateful that like the weirdly this happened last year too. And the wines were a little more like there was kind of because it was just the first time and then also just the DRC like.
Oh well, yeah, DRC
sleight of hand you pulled, but like
yeah.
This time it was like really driven home for me, like how like oh good, I'm glad we're drinking wines this insane because like anything less than this would be insufficient to this meal. Like
yeah.
It was different maybe than the last time in that like there were other wines that could maybe have accomplished it, but they would have had to have been like as old and as spectacular. It was like yeah, this is there are other things, but they're not like cheaper. They're similarly priced.
Totally. No, I think like in terms of like our like me and Steve, right? Like what like a lot of chefs and stuff, like where they go wrong is that they stop making food that they like to eat and they start making shit that they think that, you know, oh well this is what, you know,
this is stylish, this is trendy.
This is stylish or this is whatever. So this is like a vision that someone this person I'm trying to impress wants or whatever the fuck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that meal really was like kind of shit that we would, like if it's just me and him hanging out, we would make that type of shit and like kind of drink that type of shit and laugh to ourselves being like, this is the dumbest shit in the world, you know?
Which
not like we would get Cristal and Cuvée Cervantes to Churchill. Like we, you know, not to that level, but like we would have a very nice bottle of champagne. And then we would get a very nice old bottle of Amarone. And the only difference is maybe with the Sauternes that like I would have done like maybe the bottle of Dwazi Dane from that we had the two nights after.
Mm-hmm.
That one would do that with the Pavlova instead.
Don't worry, folks. We drank Dwazi Dane.
We drank it. Yeah. We drank a certain wine that they make.
Want to just go back to what you were saying about like the, you know, chefs getting into like a vision or like, you know, just to drive how insane this whole thing was as like a just a nice little like tag to make this all seem even more insane for the audience. You can edit this out, I guess, if it's like given away too much or like feels too like dancing in the end zone kind of thing. But this whole meal was eaten off of one of a kind flatware designed by so.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody replicating that evening.
Oh, man. It's, it just seemed fitting.
Yeah. It was,
you know?
It was, yeah, you know, it was nuts. Like, it was nuts.
And also, I think, like, it was, the DRC dinner obviously was, like, so fun for so many reasons. But I think this one was more, like, this one was more earnest because it wasn't like, look at these crazy wines that I got and let's celebrate these wines, you know?
Yeah.
It was more so like, let's just celebrate, like, let's think of like the most preposterous version of a dinner that we would really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's do it, you know?
No, the theme of this dinner was, let's have a really good ass time.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, it's not like, oh yeah, with this dish, oh, we had this.
Nailed
and then...
it. Fucking nailed it. God damn it.
Well, it wasn't like, because it wasn't like, oh, there's this fucking, oh, with the Latoche, we should have this, and with the Richebourg, we should do blah, 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 blah. It's like, now we got a bunch of really good wines. Hey, like, what should we drink with this thing? One of these? Okay, cool. And so it kind of became like, instead of this sort of like discreet sort of experience of like, this, first we had this, and then we had this, and then actually, all the way over here, blah, blah, blah. It was like, it was just like just a incredibly fun blur. Incredibly fun blur. But not because we were like fucking egregiously hammered, but because it was just, you're just like, that's intoxicated off of like the, the yeah. No, because you're just like, no, because you're just like, you're just overloaded on just goodness.
The good shit.
The good shit.
The good shit. And
just very good food and very good people and just, everybody's just fucking hanging out.
And for a little preview of next episode, I don't remember if this is a Patreon one or not.
Haven't decided on this.
Tune in for Napa. It is, in fact, the good shit. And if this is a Patreon episode, I don't need to say anything, but if it turns out not to be a Patreon episode and you're still listening, please go to patreon.com/corktaint to sign up and get access to, again, if this isn't the Patreon episode, the upcoming Patreon episode in which we discuss Napa. Is it good? It turns out it was in the 80s and then, you know, it just needed the time.
So,
yes, it just takes time.
Yes.
Inflation, well, folks. It's taken Napa away from all of us.
It has, yes.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because there's a lot of really fucking good shit, you know? But also another case of just people drink wine way too young and large majority of the time. It's not their fault, you know?
Nope.
It's just that it's just...
Yeah.
Dude, it was so funny on the Olga Raffo post I made today.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy just commented like, you gotta try the 80, or no, not even you gotta, just like, try the 89. And I'm like, dude, like, I looked it up, and a bottle of 1989, like, is like $300. I'm like, dude, I got this for $30. I got the 83 for $30. Like, I was like, you can't just find it, but clearly it's like, oh, he's, money is not a, like, he wouldn't, like, look up and be like, oh, how much is this thing? Oh, okay, but he's, that guy's never, like, checking his fucking bank statement before he fucking pays his credit card bill. You know what I mean? Like, he's not lying.
Yeah.
He's not doing any of that shit. So it's just, but anyway, so it's just funny because that's a lot of the people who are
fucking it up for everybody else.
Fucking it up for everybody else. And just like, it's funny that a lot of these posts, that this string of ridiculous posts is attracting some of those people because it's like, that's what they're accustomed to.
Yeah.
And it's like, we gotta throw a silly one in there.
I got some ideas. We got some work to do now.
Nice. All right. So very good. Well, is that you want to say that's a wrap?
Let's say that's a wrap.
Let's wrap her up, folks. Thank you.
You're
beautiful people.
Folks.
And you know, we didn't watch Get Her Done, unfortunately, but we did. I watched all of Doctor Strangelove.
Again, you tune in two episodes from now to hear about how one of your hosts is he's a sleepy boy.
Yeah, all it takes is some California brandy, about half of a Cuban cigar from the 80s, probably. Who knows?
One of the most spectacular other dinners that you could ever hope to have.
Oh, man, yeah.
God. For the visual, I want the visual I want people to have, and people don't know what I look like, but just for the sense of like how I felt and kind of was enjoying myself that night, you got to add about 50 pounds to my frame. It's just, 'cause there's a certain real painting. Jolly. There's a certain painting that I was really embodying.
Oh man, that is like that's just the Buddha. Yeah, just out of dinner.
Oh yeah,
that's what that guy is.
Just, the future Buddha.
Future Buddha. Yep. All right, man. All right. See you guys.
We love you all.